This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, so 20 years ago, May 25th, 1999, rather. It's 2019 right now. May 25th, 1999. 20 years ago today, Dan Snyder bought the Washington Redskins. Now, there's many stories that have been circulating around about how he came to power and how he bought the team that he rooted for as a child, and the process and the blind auction and the demands and, you know, the hopes and the fortune that he landed on, how he came to be so filthy rich, what he paid, what it's worth now, the Cook family, you know, just everything, right? There's a lot of that out there. I can't read everything to you on the radio. But what I was looking for us to get into this hour at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. Scott Allen of the DC Sports Blog and the Washington Post has a season-by-season breakdown and look at Dan Snyder's 20 years of ownership and a really, really kind of goofy picture of him and Vinny Serrato at FedEx Field from a long time ago, from back actually in 1999 when they took over, right? And what I wanted to get into with you guys, there's so much negativity. I got it. I understand. We're not trying to pull any punches here, right? Nobody would say that Dan Snyder has had a good ownership tenure of the Washington Redskins. Nobody can argue that it's been successful in any other way than for the Snyder family, for Dan Snyder's fortune, for Bruce Allen's fortune, because he's been here for half the time, unfortunately. That's it. There is nobody else that has really richly and totally and truthfully enjoyed 20 years of Dan Snyder. Okay? That's just as nice as I can say it. Right? If you like winning, if you like being a normal franchise, if you like being a smart franchise, if you like to avoid dysfunctional disasters and circuses, then you can't like anything about the last 20 years when it comes to the Washington Redskins and ownership. Because even when they've gone on a playoff run, it's been literally a magic carpet ride, right? It's been suck for most of the year, get hot in December 2005, of course, 2007 in the wake of Sean T's murder and funeral, 2012 under Mike Shanahan with Robert, 2015, quite honestly. Again, they were kind of floundering around and then just got hot last four or five games of the season under Kirk Cousins and in Jay Gruden's second year. They haven't, of course, been to the playoffs since. So there's not a lot positive we can say. But to be fair, right, to be open and truthful, right, it would be a hatchet job just for us to say, oh, well, there's nothing good about Dan Snyder's tenure. There's nothing good about his ownership. Of course there has been some good. There has been some moments. There have been some great days. There have been some electric days and nights at FedEx Field. And times where you just beat your chest and you're proud to be a Redskins fan, right? That's what a lot of you guys are. I'm not a fan. I'm a member of the media. I root for them to win because it's better for all of us. And it's certainly better for me. I can tell you that much. Okay, but I'm not a true fan, die hard, you know, like you guys who are born and kind of have it in your blood. I don't, but I hope that they win. I root for them to win because it's better for ratings. It's better for my sanity. It's better for my mental health. I have less of you clowns and idiots to argue with, and you guys want to fire less coaches. And Twitter is a happier place when the Redskins win. So what I'm looking for from you is this, at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067, or if you want to drop off a tweet, at WrestleMania621, what is the best and worst of the last 20 years? The thing that you like the best, the moment that you like the best, the decision that you like the best, the moment that you felt most proud, and what has been the worst? And there's plenty from column A and plenty from column B. So I just jotted down a few just off the top of my head, right? From the best category at 800-636-1067. I think bringing back Joe Gibbs, part deux, 2004, after the disaster of Steve Spurrier, is a huge, huge, huge accomplishment and moment for Dan Snyder. No, it did not lead to a Super Bowl. Yes, it did lead to an ultimate tragedy, again, as we just referenced with Sean Taylor. But Joe and Coach Gibbs, who just went into the NASCAR Hall of Fame, was here for 4 years. And yes, there were two magic carpet rides, but they made the playoffs 2 out of 4 years. That's a 50% clip. That's better than anybody else has done here. That's better than anyone else has done here. And Joe Gibbs restored the tradition and the history and the nostalgia, if you will, of the Washington Redskins that had been missing so long under a couple of clown shows that Dan Snyder created, most notably Steve Spurrier. So to me, Joe Gibbs being hired in 2004 to come back for a second time after, what, 11, 12 years on the shelf? Being in NASCAR, being in the television studio, to me, that is a huge accomplishment. That is a huge best moment for Dan Snyder. Is it number one? I'll let you guys determine that. But that, to me, stands out first and foremost out of the best. Like, if it's not one, it's, like, not very far from one. Again, it kind of depends on your perspective. But I would assume most people are going to pick that as the number one moment of the last 20 years. 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. Hopefully you guys have a pulse on this, you know, because it kind of works that way, like we want to talk to you. And I think this is, you know, kind of a fun exercise and a way to celebrate, honor, remember, mourn, whatever descriptive analogy you want to use, the 20 years of Dan Snyder's ownership. A couple of other moments that I think are important to point out, right? You have the drafting of great generational Redskins. We mentioned Sean Taylor already. Chris Cooley, third round out of Utah. Santana Moss, the acquisition of Santana Moss from the New York Jets. Clinton Portis, even though it cost a Hall of Fame cornerback in Champ Bailey, Clinton Portis was a, you know, again, ultimately the Broncos got the better part of that deal. I don't think many would dispute that. But Clinton Portis was a very productive member of the Washington Redskins. Again, you can argue all day long that they made a bet. Again, the Broncos won that trade. Champ Bailey's a Hall of Famer. Clinton Portis is not. But that was a kind of significant turning of the corner moment, maybe for the wrong reasons. But that was a really good moment. I think it could also be looked at as a really bad moment. The 2012 NFC East Championship. I was there that night. I covered that team, obviously, for several years before and several years after on a day-in, day-out basis. That was the best night that I had covering the Washington Redskins. Everything else was a complete volcanic disaster. I will never forget that night. I remember on the sidelines, Sunday night football against the Dallas Cowboys, win and you're in, and your division champs lose and you're done. So you had NFC East, most hated rival, last week of the season, Sunday night football, Griffin coming off the injury, the Redskins riding, again, this magic carpet ride of having won 6 in a row. Mike Shanahan, the energy in the building, the national television drama that was about to play out. the cold, frigid conditions that night at FedEx Field. Then I remember being on the sidelines, on the Redskins sideline, and Raheem Morris, who's now with the Atlanta Falcons, who was then a Redskins assistant coach, former Tampa Bay Buccaneer head coach, walked over to me. He goes, you know, he's in shorts. And I said, Raheem, what the bleep are you doing? You know, what are you doing? It's like 10 degrees out here. And he goes, it's time to go win an effing championship. That's what he said. You know? And, you know, like, he didn't care about the cold. And then Alfred Morris rips off 200 yards that night, and Griffin has that sweeping run for a touchdown. And the Redskins, three interceptions of Tony Romo, right? I think Rob Jackson had one. I'm trying to remember. Corner had another. I'd have to look up all the interceptions, but I know Rob Jackson had one. That night was by far the best night in my 6 years on the beat. By far the best moment in my 6 years on the beat. So there have been plenty of good, right? There's also been plenty of bad, and that's the problem. 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. We're highlighting the best moments and the worst moments. The best decisions, moments, the worst moments and decisions for you as a Redskins fan in Dan Snyder's 20 years of ownership today. 20 years ago, he bought the Washington Redskins. We'll also tell you a little bit about how that all came to pass. Again, plenty of columns out there. The Post has done a nice job in posting all this stuff and kind of celebrating it, memorializing it, whatever you want to kind of call it, but we'll go through it all. 20 years ago today, Dan Snyder bought the Washington Redskins from the estate of Jack Kent Cook and, of course, FedEx Field, and here we are 20 years later, and the Redskins are still largely a mess, although many signs are pointing up towards at least them being a stable franchise. And maybe in some ways they've been stable over the last couple of years, at least stable compared to how they normally are. Is that the best moment? Is drafting Dwayne Haskins the best moment because of the hope that he provides? Thursday night, 3 weeks ago in the first round, Sweat, Montez Sweat and Dwayne Haskins, is that the best moment? What is it for you? And as well, what is the worst moment, the worst decision that Dan Snyder has made in his 20 years of ownership? 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. I'll have some highlights or some lowlights from the worst list next. Hopefully you guys will join us here on a Saturday afternoon on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan. Before first pitch of the Nationals and the Marlins, as the Nationals go for two in a row. Again, they haven't won three in a row all year. So let's just see what happens here after last night's epic comeback. Epic might be strong. Good comeback. And see where we go from here. I can't believe you guys are this, like, out of touch. I'm just going to have to keep talking to myself. That's okay. That you guys don't care about 20 years of ownership of Dan Snyder. Maybe you're just so beaten down, I don't know. I thought a creative way to kind of do this would be not to just pummel the guy like a punching bag. And listen, I've said this a million times. Dan was fine to me. I'm not going to tell you we're friends. We're not. I'm not going to tell you I talked to him. We don't. I'm not going to tell you that we had great moments together. We didn't. But in my 6 years directly around the team every day, 5 years working for the radio station he owned, he treated me fine. Is the best way I could put it. He was cordial. He was nice. He was polite to me. He would occasionally ask my opinion on things. We would have some conversations. They were somewhat awkward and uncomfortable, at least for me. I don't know about for him. But it was fine. I haven't talked to him in a long, long, long time. Long time. I don't hate Dan Snyder like you guys do. And that's okay. I'm not telling you he's been a good owner. He hasn't. I'm not telling you that he's been a good person. He hasn't. I think he's probably better than his reputation, quite honestly. in terms of how he treats people, but he's earned a lot of his reputation. And a lot of it was how he treated people when he was much younger, and maybe to some degree now, and how hypersensitive he is, and how impatient and irrational at times he's been. It's all part of the mix. Listen, I'm a pain in the ass to deal with. Anyone that knows me, anyone that deals with me, anyone that talks to me, my kids know it, everyone knows it. I'm a pain in the ass. You know, at times I can be very friendly and happy and, you know, caring and sensitive and all that stuff. And at times I could, you know, I'm always nice to people, but I can be really, really, really miserable because I'm frustrated, I'm angry, I'm hostile about a lot of things that don't need to be bitched about on the radio. And I want better. I want better. I deserve better. I've earned better. You know, so I get it. I don't always treat people the same exact way I should. I don't keep in touch with everybody that I should. You know, I'm far from perfect, so I'm always hesitant to just crush people without giving at least the opportunity to provide a balanced perspective. So we said, hey, the positive moments, the best moments of the Dan Snyder 20-year ownership to this day, as we celebrate, or whatever you want to call it, 20 years of Dan Snyder ownership, is bringing back Joe Gibbs, is the trade for Santana Moss, is the 2012 division championship on Sunday Night Football against the Dallas Cowboys. That was my best moment of the 6 years that I was on the beat and the time that I've been around Washington, D.C. You know, of course, drafting Sean Taylor. Got it. Cooley. The trade for Santana Moss, the trade for Clinton Portis, so on and so on. I mean, there are moments, right? To me, the best moment that I experienced, again, was 2012. The division champ. It was nothing to do with Robert Griffin, trust me, in terms of, like, best moment. Like, he was a part of it, but that's not why they won that division. Okay? So that was, to me, the best moment. What about for you? The worst moments... I mean, where does the list begin? From Albert Hainsworth to firing Marty Schottenheimer after a year to hiring and still keeping Bruce Allen to firing Charlie Casserly when he first took over ownership of the Redskins and hiring Vinny Serrato and shaping and molding him into what most people feel is... fairly or unfairly, you know, essentially a clown-type figure. And there are many, many, many more. I would argue the desperate, desperate need to get a franchise quarterback that wasn't ready to be here, that wasn't ready to play in the NFL, that wasn't ready to be the second overall pick, that wasn't ready to be empowered to the umpteenth degree by the owner, so that he could basically run ramshot over the head coach and general manager and the organization. You know, that's a bad moment. That's not a good moment. That's a bad moment. From the field, the playoff loss that Griffin tore up his knee again, to, you know, letting Kirk Cousins go, to, I mean, there's, you know, so many bad decisions. So many bad decisions. Albert Hainsworth, good God almighty. So many bad decisions. What's the best and what's the worst? 800-636-1067. Let's get to Sahiv in Fairfax. What's up, Sahiv? How are you?
Hey, Rooster, Sahiv. So I don't know if it's a highlight moment, but I mean, I think where I started feeling different about Dan Snyder was probably in one of the darkest moments of the franchise after Sean Taylor passed away. And there is a human element that he displays every once in a while, but I think, you know, people forget about. I mean, there's a connection he has with some of his players that you know, we look, as outsiders, we look in on it and we think, okay, well, you know, he's like, you know, he wants to be in the circle of RG3 when he was around and to the detriment of Kirk Cousins, but he connects with certain players and it's typically players that the rest of us can't empathize with. And I think, you know, I don't know if it's a highlight, but I would say, like, the moment that I started feeling differently about Dan Snyder was at those moments when things were most challenging for individuals on the franchise.
Well, to kind of piggyback off of that, right? We've heard countless stories of, you know, now look, he can afford to do this. So let's not patronize him like, oh my God, you know, like he scratched together two nickels and made this happen, right? He's allowed many coaches, many players, many employees to use his private jet or paid for them to get to, you know, because of a funeral or death in the family or sick child or whatever it might be. There's plenty of those stories, and he does deserve credit for them. However, you know, again, that seems to be counterbalanced by suing the 85-year-old grandmother for season tickets, you know, for some of the way he treated people earlier on in his tenure. And again, I would argue the Dan Snyder that I know, and again, we didn't have a close relationship. We had a cordial relationship is how I would describe the Dan Snyder that I know, you know, treated everybody that I observed and people that I talked to fair, you know, or reasonably decent. Better than his reputation, let's put it that way.
No, and I do agree. So, like, he should ultimately be held accountable for the actions of the people he puts in place to make decisions, right? And so, but I do wonder if those actions, like, you know, suing an 85-year-old season ticket holder, was his decision or that of the people he put in place, right? I mean, but I think I tweeted this to you earlier. I would much rather have a Dan Snyder who spends his money on a franchise that he loves foolishly and perhaps in an egotistical manner, as opposed to one who doesn't spend money, right? And going back to Sean Taylor issue, I mean, it wasn't so much, you know, chartering a plane or allowing people to use his private plane. It's the stories you hear about him literally being in the ER, in the waiting room,
right?
Waiting, right? I mean, and it's, you know, for a person of his stature, time is money. And that shows a certain human element of him. And I would say this about him, and it's true not only for sports, it's true for politics, it's true for a lot of walks in life. People always look kindly upon people on the past. So if he owns a team for another 20 years, if he squeezes out a Super Bowl appearance or perhaps a title, I think the city will love him, right? I mean, I think the city will fall in love with him as an owner.
I think he's got to win a Super Bowl to make all of the – I mean, it will never be forgotten, but I think it will be forgiven. Is that
exactly.
I think that's the best way to look at it, right? But he's got to win a Super Bowl in order for that to happen, because that's the only way he's going to be able to erase some of the bad taste that people have in their mouths.
A quick question for you, though. How long did Jack Hancock own the team for? Was it 20 years or was it?
I'll have to double check that. I don't know the answer.
Yeah, I mean, but he's actually pushing his tenure, if not close to.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be surpassing JKC sometime soon.
Yeah, I'll get that answer for you as soon as I can look it up. Thanks, pal. Appreciate it.
Right.
Good call, though. Good to hear from you, as always. Have a good weekend. Jeremy Huber, who works for SiriusXM and is a good dude, and I used to work with. He also does American University play-by-play with my pal, the Dean, Dan Lang, tweeted, by hiring Joe Gibbs, he ruined the past. Instead of just remembering the Super Bowls and big games of Joe Gibbs 1.0, we remember crap like calling the timeout against the Bills and him running a 1980s-style defense. Justin on Twitter says, the best, Gibbs 2.0, worst, $100 million man who did the worm on Monday Night Football, i.e. Albert Haynesworth. Tony, at Redskins Crazy One, says, Santana Moss Monday Night, boom, boom, the best Monday Night game I have ever seen. And then Mark Miller got upset at me because I said, when the Redskins make the playoffs, it's literally a magic carpet ride. And he said, literally? Question mark. Really? Question mark. I'm sorry, Mark. I'll do better next time. I'll get every right, every phrase, every expression, every statement perfect. I'm sorry. I apologize. I suck. What can you tell? What can I tell you? I mean, I'll go kick rocks during the break, just for good measure. 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067, the best and the worst of Dan Snyder. One worst moment that I just thought of and just remembered, I was on the beat for. There were many of those. Let me tell you, there were many of those. This might top the cake. I'll tell you next on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Join us just after 3 o'clock from Nationals Park. JT the Vic is also going to stop by. We'll explain why when we get there. Our intrepid Nationals executive producer. And it really has nothing to do with Nationals baseball. We'll explain when JT pops by the studio. Sean Summers on the other side of the glass. I'm merely the Rooster, Chris Russell, with you. With you for less than another hour. Thanks to Steve Wino for joining us earlier in the show. Thanks to you for being a part of this Saturday afternoon. Little bit of a lull in the sports calendar right now, right? The Nationals, even though the comeback win last night, they're 11 games under 500. The Caps are long gone. The Wizards haven't hired a GM yet. They're like 19th in the lottery and, you know, like no hope there. Nobody's that fired up, I got to be honest with you, about DC United at this point, about the Valor and all. I mean, it's just kind of a lull, right? I mean, the Redskins have OTAs and, you know, the Reuben Foster stuff was a big story, but it wasn't anything positive. It kind of curtailed some of the enthusiasm that was being felt from the Montez Sweat and Dwayne Haskins acquisitions and drafting, along with the good rest of the draft. So today, conveniently, is Dan Snyder's 20th anniversary as Redskins owner. So we were kind of highlighting the best and the worst on kind of asking you guys for your opinions. And I remembered a particularly worse moment, and it was awful, awful, awful in so many ways. So many ways. Ready for this? It was the Monday Night Massacre against the Philadelphia Eagles. On Monday Night Football in 2010. And what made it worse from start to finish was, if you remember, Donovan McNabb was benched 2 weeks before that, eight games into his Redskins tenure, because allegedly he wasn't in good cardiovascular shape, according to Mike Shanahan. It was because Mike Shanahan was pissed and Kyle Shanahan, and they both hated Donovan McNabb, and they couldn't stand him, and he didn't know the playbook, and he couldn't call plays, and he was a just complete mess. And I liked Donovan. I liked covering Donovan. We got along well. I remember, I'll tell that story maybe in a little bit. But Donovan was benched right before the bye in a loss to the Detroit Lions. And then the bye happens, and there's oh my God, like, what? Whoa, like cardiovascular, like how, Shanahan means business. How could he do that to Donovan McNabb? Shanahan means new sheriff in town. And then 15 days later, you start hearing rumors about this. You start hearing speculation, right? As he is, as he is in his final year of his contract, right? That Donovan McNabb might get a contract extension. What? How could you have the new head coach and general manager bench him for allegedly bad cardiovascular shape? Allegedly. And then give him a contract extension. How does that work? What? And I'll never forget the day of that Eagles-Redskins game. I remember Monday Night Football and ESPN had an event at near the Wharf. I think it was at the Stage Theater, actually. And I remember going to the event, and my phone was blowing up. Talking like back and forth with different sources and whatever. And it leaked out somebody reported, I don't remember who, that Donovan McNabb was going to get a contract extension and that the contract extension had been agreed to. So I'm efforting to confirm the news, talk to Redskins people, talk to Donovan's people, so on and so forth. And it was just a nightmare, right, trying to track that story. Finally, you get confirmation of it. Go on 106.7 because I was still with 106.7 at that point. But get to the stadium at like 4 o'clock-ish, roughly, for, again, a Monday night football game, right? Now, I remember being out in my car in the parking lot as it's getting dark because at this point, you know, it's the time change and all that stuff. And I'm texting and I'm trying to clarify what the information is on the contract, right? And, you know, what McNabb's people are telling you, it's $100 million or whatever it was. And, you know, other people are like, don't believe that for a second. It's a phony baloney extension. It's this, it's that, whatever. Anyway, the big narrative of the story is that Donovan McNabb gets the contract, right? And it gets announced, and the Redskins are playing his former team now. Now, this is the second time they're playing the Eagles, so it's not the first matchup, but it is Monday Night Football. It's at FedEx Field, and McNabb gets the contract extension 15 days after the debacle in Detroit. And then the Redskins come out, and on the first play of the game, Deshaun blows past Leron Landry for, an 80-yard deep post touchdown, whatever it was, 75 yards. I don't even remember what it was. And the final score is like 58-27 or whatever it was. Doesn't matter. It was a disaster. McNabb was awful. The defense was awful. The Redskins were awful. Everyone was furious. Everyone was up in arms. Everyone was like, oh my God, what a nightmare. And just to make it worse, Albert Haynesworth was caught rolling around on the floor like a fish out of water and basically acting half dead. And that just made it go from zero to, it was already at 90. That made it go past 100, you know, like on the, oh my God, we are doomed forever. We are bleeped forever scale. If the bleeped forever scale was 0 to 100 and they were already at 90 because of the McNabb extension, because of the chaos and the, and again, even the McNabb decision, the way it's been described, again, you believe whatever you believe, is Mike and Kyle Shanahan would not have made that move. Yet, supposedly, Mike Shanahan had full control of football operations. He never really had full control. Bruce Allen had equal, if not more, control. Bruce Allen made the decisions. Mike Shanahan had a lot of say, a lot of input, a lot of control. Whatever his contract said, Mike also tried to play nice, right? You don't want to get your tenure off to a terrible start and I mean, he knows the history of Marty Schottenheimer. You know, you start bad-mouthing the owner, you start telling the owner to go kick rocks and to go fly a kite, and I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm the new sheriff in town, and the new owner's going to fire you because that's his history. That's his history. So the decision already at that point is a disaster. Then, solely and only because they wanted it to not look like a complete circus, they got a phony baloney contract extension done on Monday night, on the day of Monday Night Football, just so that they wouldn't have, oh my God, the gloom and doom of the Washington Redskins on a 3+ hour national stage, only to be involved in what commonly became known as the Monday Night Massacre. And Albert Haynesworth on the ground like a fish out of water. And McNabb horrible and soon to be benched again and soon to be gone again. And Haynesworth was gone after that as well. And the Redskins, I don't want to say they never recovered because obviously they won two division championships after that night, 2012 and 2015. But in a lot of ways, that night was just the opposite of the division-clinching win against the Cowboys in 2012 that I talked about earlier. That night was symbolic of 20 years of absolute chaos, absolute frustration, absolute debacle, absolute just almost hysterical, like weirdly hysterical, almost in a sadistically hysterical type of way, if that makes sense. That night, to me, encapsulated what the Redskins have been about way too often for the last 20 years. That night, anything and everything that could go wrong leading up to that night and that night was symbolic of what the Washington Redskins have been way too much of in the Dan Snyder era. And I think that night kind of, again, represents a lot. Represents not all, represents a lot of the last 20 years, quite honestly. It was a night that I'll never forget. It was a complete and total bleep show. That's all I can say. It was a complete and total epic bleep show from start to finish. And when we start talking about bad karma and bad luck and bad energy and a black cloud, it's nights like those. It's decisions like that that makes you believe some of that stuff, if not a lot of it. 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. We'll take a quick timeout as we talk about the 20-year ownership of Dan Snyder. 20 years ago today, he purchased the Washington Redskins. We'll have some background on how that exactly went down next on The Fan. All right, Craig Heist is going to join us in about 10 minutes live from Nationals Park. Before we get there, let's go to Mike in Bethesda on The Fan. Good afternoon, Mike. How are you?
Just fine, Chris. Great company on a holiday weekend.
Oh, thank you so much.
I know I'm not the world's most dedicated Redskins fan, but I remember one night that I got a lot of enjoyment out of them, and that was that Thanksgiving night behind RG3 when they beat the Redskins, when they beat the Dallas Cowboys on nationwide TV.
Yeah, that's a good pull because I've talked a lot about the division winning game against the Cowboys on that New Year's Eve or whatever. I guess it wasn't New Year's Eve. It was the night before New Year's Eve that I mentioned several times throughout the show. And that great. And obviously it has more, I guess, importance than that Thanksgiving Day game. But to your point, that night where they clinched the division doesn't happen if they don't dominate and win that game and then hold on in the end, 38-28, I want to say, on Thanksgiving Day. And to your point, four touchdown passes in the second quarter, including the final one to the front pin of the end zone to Santana Moss. And I remember being at AT&T Stadium that day with Larry and Sonny and Sam Huff and being in the broadcast booth. And we were just, I mean, it was unbelievable watching that display. It was like, oh my God, this really, and it crashed soon after, Mike, but that, you're right. That was a great, great, great day.
I vividly remember it because I was visiting family up in upstate New York, up in the Adirondacks. And we were sitting in the family room in front of the fire watching this, and I was the hero of the evening. My team won.
There you go. There you go. I hope you had a good full belly that day, right? From all
I can vividly remember the whole evening, the whole afternoon and evening.
That's what
America's about.
I will tell you this, Mike. I'll give you a little thing that nobody will care about except for me, right? AT&T Stadium in Dallas or Arlington is wonderful. It was my favorite, one of my favorite, if not my favorite stadiums to to go visit just because the pure opulence and just how amazing everything is there, even though it represents the Dallas Cowboys, right? But here's one thing that was kind of disappointing. And the people that go now and have covered the Redskins twice on Thanksgiving Day since then in Dallas in the last 3 years, they talk about it like it's some grand thing. I was disappointed by Jerry Jones' Thanksgiving. Like the meal was good. It was fine. I can do better than that. I was expecting caviar. I was expecting fried shrimp. I was expecting lasagna. I was expecting all the bells and whistles in addition to the turkey and the stuffing, you know? And a big fat guy like me, hey, I want more than what I got, you know?
Yeah, well.
I'm just teasing.
Yeah, glad it's a wonderful memory for both of us.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mike. Good to hear from you. Enjoy your weekend, and thanks for the buzz. I appreciate the phone call. Good to hear from him. All right, Craig Heist is going to join us in just a couple of wee moments right here on The Fan. We'll get his thoughts on the come-from-behind win last night, what it means, what significance, if any, Juan Soto, red hot, Matt Adams back-to-back, the bullpen, the Nationals making moves. We'll get all of that from the host of also Nats Talk Live. But of Quick Pitch coming up today at 3:30 before Nats on Deck. All of that to come in just a couple of moments right here on The Fan. All right, ladies and gentlemen, good to have you aboard with us. Final half an hour or so, we'll take you up to Quick Pitch with Craig Heist coming up at the bottom of the hour, and then Nats on Deck, 3:35, Charlie and Dave. 4:05, the first pitch, Patrick Corbin against the Miami Marlins as the Nationals look to string together two wins in a row after last night's comeback and win 12-10 over Miami, snapping their winning streak at six and snapping the Nationals' losing streak at five. And speaking of Craig Heist, he joins us right here, right now, live from Nationals Park, where he's getting set again to host Quick Pitch, and I believe Nats Talk Live after the game. Hello, Heistar. How are you?
Now Phil Wood's in today on the post game.
Phil Wood, everybody, yes. Ladies and gentlemen. So the Heistar is just going to go do an interview after the game with whoever walks off with a home run today, because, of course, that's going to happen, right? And the Nationals are going to win two in a row today, Heisty.
Well, isn't that the way it normally happens?
No.
No. How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you? That was a pretty epic comeback last night.
Long, too.
Very entertaining, yes.
All 4 hours of it, yeah, absolutely. And today they'll look to Patrick Corbin at 4-2 with a 3.25 ERA to go up against Sandy Alcantara. And he's 2-4, so we'll see what the Nationals can do with him. A lot of optimism out of it last night, even though it was a very sloppy game. They made four errors, two by Trey Turner, both in the same inning. It was a deal where they had to come back from three separate deficits and then down 9-8 in the eighth inning, mm-hmm. When they got the three-run homer and then the solo homer from Matt Adams after Juan Soto went deep. But, again, when you had that kind of adversity, you didn't play a very good game fundamentally, and yet, you know, your bullpen did what this bullpen has done throughout the year, give up a few runs, not be able to hold what the offense has gotten for you, and yet still find a way to win. I say breaking a five-game slide, especially with the way that series played out in New York. That was a massive win for this club last night. Does it get them turned around? Who only knows, Chris? I have no idea. I can't figure it out anymore with this team. But I know one thing has to happen, and that's the top three in this rotation have to continue to pitch the way they've are capable of pitching. Somebody's got to step up. This bullpen cannot continue to pitch with an ERA of 7. And, again, they got to get some help out of the back two positions in the rotation and play better baseball, just cleaner baseball. That's what will get this thing turned around.
More fundamentally crisp baseball, no doubt about it. And that's, I guess, the biggest worrisome spot for me, Heisty, is like everybody talks about the bullpen. But I've talked about this a lot over the last, couple of months, and recently again, and all this week, is that it's not one problem to fix. It's a lot of problems to fix. It's lack of clutch hitting at at times, and I know that happens, I get it, but at times it's striking out too much. It's the bad fielding. It's the bad four and five spot. It's a lot of things to fix, but like you said, if you just do the little things right, a little bit better, for crying out loud, you'll probably be a 500-ish team.
Yeah, and you know, to get to where they eventually would like to go, they're going to have to play about 620 baseball the rest of the way to hit that 90 win mark. And I think most people think that 90 is going to win this division. Could be a little bit more, but I still lay claim to the fact that I don't think anybody's going to run away with this thing. Now, you know, you're sitting there right now 10 games out of first place, but again, that means the top teams, like the Phillies up top, are going to have to continue to play really good baseball. They have their own problems, not just in the pen, but also with some of their starting pitching. But again, their offense is such that you can make up for a lot of deficiencies when you can score runs like that.
My guy, the Heist star, Craig Heist, is with us. He's coming up at the bottom of the hour, live from Nationals Park for Quick Pitch, right before Nats on Deck with Charlie and Dave for Game 2 of this series. Why has Juan Soto figured it out? Was he just due, and this is just a run that a good hitter, a good young hitter, is going to get on, or has he figured something out about how opponents were pitching him and what he has to do to get on this torrid streak, which started way before last night, but obviously the icing on the cake last night?
Well, I think that we know kind of what kind of a hitter he was last year in terms of, you know, knowing the strike zone, not swinging at bad pitches. I thought he fell into a little bit of a trap in that early in the year. But right now, I mean, you know, he's got the 8-game hitting streak. He's hitting an even 300 or 500 over that stretch, 15 for 30. And, you know, he's come up with big hits. Obviously, the 3-run homer last night. He's got 9 RBI over that stretch. He's got a couple of home runs, 5 doubles, a triple. He's scored 9 runs. So, I mean, he's in the middle of everything for this offense right now. And what's even better for me coming out of last night, Chris, is the fact that Trey Turner had a couple of singles. He scored a run. Adam Eaton hit the home run last night, had an RBI ground out, and also scored 2 runs on the night. If those two guys can stay healthy at the top of the lineup, and you have Rendon, Soto, whether it's Matt Adams or Ryan Zimmerman, but then it could be a Howie Kendrick, you know, guys like that. Mm-hmm. That sets the table for those guys underneath the two top guys in the lineup. If Eaton and Turner can continue to get on base and set the table for these guys, I think you'll see a lot more consistent offense. And from an offensive standpoint, you know, they've scored 53 runs in their last 10 games, and that dates back to May the 15th, and there's only 2 teams in the National League that have done better, and that's the Braves with 58 and the Cubs with 56. So, again, there's enough in this lineup, I think, to get it done. They have to clean up the fundamental baseball aspect of this to be able to move forward.
No doubt. Craig Heist with us from Nationals Park. Let's get into the pitching staff and the bullpen situation, right? They optioned Joe Ross to, what, Triple-A Fresno, and I guess there's a report out there from New York Newsday that they've signed George Contos, a veteran relief pitcher who's been pitching with the Single-A independent Long Island Ducks of all teams.
Okay.
That hasn't been confirmed by the Nationals, but, I mean, it just kind of shows you the desperate measures that they're at because they can't really trust anybody. But Heisty, moving beyond that, now you got a little bit of a worry spot because Doolittle, who was great last Saturday night in the whole Madden controversy, but he struggled the game before that to close out the first Mets series, and he struggled Wednesday night in New York, gave up a bunch of runs, and he struggled a little bit last night too. So now you don't even have that right now to kind of like feel absolutely secure about.
Yeah, but you know, the bottom line is that you're talking about track record, Chris, and if you're Dave Martinez and you've got a one-run lead to protect in the ninth inning, Doolittle's going to be that guy, and you gotta think of, you know, he gave up the leadoff home run last night. He gave up a single. He still stranded that runner, and they didn't get anything else off of him. Granted, he had a 3-run lead, so that was a little bit more of a comfort zone for him. But I'm sure he's down there looking at video and seeing maybe what has to be tweaked and adjusted. But Sean Doolittle is absolutely the least of my worries when it comes to that bullpen. If you want to talk about the roster moves real quick, they recalled James Bourque from AA Harrisburg, and as you said, they sent Joe Ross to AAA Fresno, but they also recalled Andrew Stevenson today from the rehab assignment and then optioned him to Fresno as well.
Right, and Bourque is a guy that some people have mentioned on the station and in Nats land
yep.
about being a possible guy that can come in here with, I don't want to go too crazy, but some wipeout stuff, right? I mean, I don't know what the expectation internally is. I guess the expectation is if he has a pulse and he can get an out or two, that would be better than what they've been dealing with. But what did we know about Bourque?
Well, when your pen has an ERA of 7, yeah, anybody that can have a pulse and throw is a good option. But no, he's 3-0 with 6 saves and a 1.33 ERA and 14 appearances out of the Harrisburg bullpen. So he's pitched well. 33 strikeouts while walking just 6. So that ratio is very good. And you know, they always talk about it. You know, strike one is the most important pitch in the game, and especially guys coming in out of the bullpen. If you're coming in out of the bullpen, you're trying to protect the lead, the last thing you want to do is do what Joe Ross did last night. He hits the first batter he faces and then turns around and walks the second one. And before you know it, it's first and second, and then he winds up giving up 3 runs by the time the inning's over with.
Greg Heist is coming up with Nat's Quick Pitch before Nat's On Deck. In terms of, like, moving forward, right, everybody had kind of, in baseball, generally looks at Memorial Day as being, like, this first milestone. I had John Heyman on yesterday, and, you know, like, he kind of looked at that, and he's been very outspoken, as has Bob Nightingale, about, oh, the Nationals would not be in this situation if they still had Dusty Baker. I guess let me ask it from this perspective. I don't expect them to make a move anytime in the next couple of days, even if they lose the next 3 games here. I mean, I guess you could make that argument. Do you sense that Mike Rizzo was truly being sincere yesterday with what he said about not evaluating a team 50 games in and not pushing the panic button? Or do you think he had to say that? And there is some sort of legitimate possibility that something could happen at some time soon.
I don't think there's a legitimate possibility that something could happen in the immediate future. If they lose these next 3 games, who knows? That could change the whole landscape. But that said, again, there's a lot of things you can point your finger at with Dave Martinez and managing this team. But there are a lot of things, Chris, that are out of his control. Now, the sad part about that is whenever that happens, and things go awry, it's usually the manager who takes the fall for it. And I don't think Davey would be in any way, shape, or form any different than any other manager. But as I said with Grant and Danny yesterday, and I said it about a week and a half ago on the Beltway Blitz, I just don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon, because for that to happen, they'd have to admit as an organization they made a mistake when they did not renew the contract of Dusty Baker to bring him back.
Craig Heist, Nat's Quick Pitch coming up at the bottom of the hour. Heisty, anything else we need to clean up on this team? I mean, you know, obviously we talked about the fielding, the bullpen. Like you correctly mentioned, they just need their top 3 in their rotation. What do we know about Anibal Sanchez, and what do we know about Jeremy Hellickson in terms of their IL stints, when they're eligible to come back, what the plan is, and are they immediately going back in the rotation?
I would think with Sanchez, you'd probably like to get him a rehab start. Hellickson hasn't been out that long, so I don't think if he's ready to come back, he would need one. However, both have said and told Dave Martinez within the last 24 hours that each are feeling much, much better. But Sanchez, I would think, would maybe go out for a start. Don't quote me. I mean, don't hold me to that, but I'm just what my thinking is on it.
Craig Heist is reporting live that
Sanchez. See, how you know? There you go. How you get people in trouble.
I never get anybody in trouble, Heistar.
Except yourself.
Exactly. Thank you, Heisty. We'll look forward to you at the bottom of the hour.
Kudos to Sean for coming out of the break with the Springsteen. That was awesome.
Well, yeah, I mean, occasionally, you know, we do things right around here, you know. And Sean does more things right than I do, you know, but occasionally, I'm glad we could make you happy, Heisty. What's the pregame meal spread today?
I haven't been back there. I've been working too hard on quick pitch.
Wow, look at you, a busy worker bee. How about that?
Now, if you believe that.
I don't. I was just trying to make it sound better. I'll see you over there in a little while.
All right, I'll see you, Chris.
All right. That's Craig Heist live from Nationals Park. We'll come back and we'll finish up the show next on The Fan. Eleven minutes or so, and the Nats on deck. Nationals baseball at 4:05. That is an executive production of JT the Vic, Vic Ferreira. Now, while we could talk Nationals, and maybe we'll have a moment, what you don't probably know is JT the Vic on Chad Dukes' show, what does he call you? Like the station psycho or whatever he calls you?
I guess he calls me a psycho.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. So I'm not going to call you that because you're not. You're a little weird.
A little bit.
A little bit.
But who is?
A little bit. I'm very weird, right?
Yeah.
I'm very weird. But the reason why I wanted to have you on to wrap up the show is you were getting to do something really, really cool, and I'm very happy for you, and I've tried to talk to you a lot about it to learn about it, but I'm far from an expert in it, so I wanted you to kind of come in and tell our audience, as we lead you up to Nationals baseball, what you're going to be doing this week coming up, and I'm just going to set the table for you. It has everything to do with the NHL, going up to Stamford, Connecticut, and the Gaming World Championships that you, my friend, are a finalist and a participant in.
That is correct. I am one of 8 U.S. finalists in the regionals that will compete to go to Las Vegas in a couple of weeks to compete against the Europeans and Canadians in NHL 19 to win a grand prize of $50,000.
So you are going to Stamford, Connecticut this week for a couple of days, and not only are you going there and to participate in Thursday's U.S. Live Regional Final again, you can start watching the coverage at 1:30 Eastern time, start watching the action of the U.S. Live Regional Final at 2 Eastern on the NHL's Twitch channel, twitch.tv/NHL. They put on this huge full-scale television production. You and I were watching some of the international they have sideline reporters, they have anchors, they have intermission updates, they have commercials. It's all from the NHL on NBC Studios. This is a pretty big freaking deal.
This is huge. They were mentioning to me, you know, this is the biggest that they've done as far as production quality. They're
right.
Trying to make this, treat this as if this was a real-life, you know, NHL deal. You know, this is the video game esports Stanley Cup playoffs.
Right.
You know, if I had to equate it to something real life.
And we know how esports is just exploding all over the place. I mean, you know, like e-gaming and all that. I mean,
yeah.
It's just becoming a huge deal, right?
It's a huge deal. I don't even watch it, and I'm a gamer. But which is kind of odd.
Right.
I don't know how people can watch, but, you know, as I participate in this, you know, it could be something that, you know, maybe I might start watching. You know, it's entertaining to see personalities. You know, when you watch these things, you know, these are kids, these are, you know, semi-adults, you could say, that are, you know, doing this. They don't have any personalities, and this is an opportunity for them to showcase, you know, what kind of skill / person they are.
And we all know you've got a great personality.
But
as you and I have discussed, you're going to be representing the Capitals, right? Is that it's what it's called?
Well,
right,
yeah, I'm gonna, everyone get.
And by the way, Capitals, send JT the Vic some gear and some stuff, for crying out loud. I don't have to make a phone call. Please do it. Said the Penguins are representing their guys. Send my guys some stuff.
Yeah, I'll be representing the Capitals. A couple of weeks ago, we had a draft, just like a regular sports draft, NHL draft,
right.
NFL draft. Everyone got to, the 8 participants got to draft their players, as did I.
And you got a pretty silly team.
Yeah, I got some good defense.
And you got Tom Silson.
I got Tom Wilson. I got Nick Backstrom.
Look at him. He's changing because he's got to act professional on television.
I got to act professional.
So I tried to throw him for a loop with the Tom Silson stuff.
Yeah.
And he, like a true pro, he rolled with it. Slam, bam.
I'm practicing.
Atta boy, JT the Vic.
I got Braden Holtby. So
no wacky, zany stuff coming up on twitch.tv/NHL. None of that stuff?
We'll see.
Because, like, yesterday, all right, I was doing Chad Dukes versus the World, and I came in during the break, and everybody's, like, riveted to their computer, and they're watching you, JT the Vic, play your NHL 19 and yelling at people or doing whatever it is that you were doing. You were, like, muttering all sorts of weird things.
Yeah.
I didn't know what the hell you were saying, and I'm like, what is this? But it looked cool. There was like a chat room, and you're on video, and JT the Vic's just playing away.
Yeah, I've been practicing and trying to showcase some of my skills. Mm-hmm. Hopefully the competitors aren't watching me,
right.
But I'm going to give that a shot.
Before we run out of time, how hard is it to adjust to players that maybe you're not as familiar with? You mentioned you had this lottery-style team, and you had to build a team, which it helps that you're a hockey fan, but when you don't know the players' strengths and minuses as much as you do your normal stuff that you play on NHL 19, how difficult of a challenge is that?
I honestly don't know how to answer that because I'm a rookie at this.
It's a good question, isn't it?
It's a very good question. Okay. You should be a sideline reporter.
Well, but, I can't match what they're going to put on their sideline reporter stuff.
Yeah, but it's going to be...
Make sure you watch her on twitch.tv/NHL if you smell what the rooster's cooking.
Yeah, but it's going to be a challenge,
good Lord.
Rooster. It's going to be tough. There's a reason why these guys are the top eight in the world.
And it's best 2 out of 3 on Thursday,
yes.
Right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, game one, you'll see highlights, and then game two, you'll see it in its entirety. And actually, the rest of the games will be in its entirety.
And you'll start at 1, the coverage starts at 1:30, again, on twitch.tv/NHL. Our own JT the Vic bidding for a trip to Vegas to represent the Capitals and us and Washington, D.C. in the NHL 19 Gaming World Championships.
Yep, you get to see that next Thursday. And currently, right now, the Canadian regionals are on at this moment. So you can check that out.
You better get out of here and start doing some scouting, pal.
I will.
Or run the Nationals broadcast.
Thanks, Rooster.
Thanks, JT the Vic. Good luck to our pal. He's the best. We're wishing him all the best. We'll tweet about it and get you guys to hopefully watch it on Thursday. Big, big moment for him. Congratulations to him. He's awesome. That's awesome. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. See you on Monday after the Nats. Adios.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.